Welcome to Not Enough Champagne, a podcast that doesn't make the rules. My name's Corey Hazelhurst and my partner in propaganda is Steve Haynes.
Hey Corey.
It's now August, which means silly season is now in full swing. We are going to talk about this week, the Tory leadership election. And it's inspired by a tweet by a politics professor, Philip Cowley. And he said, basically, stop speculating about fixed-term parliaments or Tory leadership elections unless you know the rules. So we're going to actually look at the rules of the Tory leadership contest and then maybe try and idly speculate about what that actually means. Good old days, it used to be that you could stand as a stalking horse every year as a Tory leader. And that's what happened in 1990. And Sir Anthony Meyer stood against Margaret Thatcher because she was too Eurosceptic for his tastes. And that ended very, very well. But it's different now. Now what happens is it was William Hague who changed it all in 1998. In many ways, maybe his greatest contribution to British political life. And what happens now is 15% of the Tory parliamentary party have to send a letter to the chair of the 1922 committee expressing their confidence in the leader. Now that chair at the moment is Graham Brady, and 15% of the current number of Tory MPs is 48. We do know that professional troll Philip Davies, he's put in a secret letter. We know that because he told his constituents about it in public.
And we can also therefore assume that Davies' partner in crime, Sir Christopher Chope, has probably also put one in.
I imagine so. In between trying to stop upskirting getting banned. Obviously, no one knows for certain, but Tim Shipman at the Sunday Times, who's generally one of the more well-informed journalists, one of his sources was saying he reckons there's about 40 MPs who've put in a letter.
Which is obviously dangerously close from the government's perspective to the magical number, which will cause a vote of no confidence.
Yes. You can withdraw your letter as well. So you can put it in and then withdraw it and put it back in. It's a very, very movable feast.
Yeah, indeed. And in fact, the government seems to have been trying to put a bit of pressure onto Tory backbenchers to withdraw letters, utilising the threat of a possible snap general election, therefore a possible Corbyn prime ministership, as a way to try and persuade people that keeping the letters in isn't a good idea.
I want Gavin Bowell to go the full Richard Nixon and break into Graham Brady's office and steal some of the letters and just artificially get the tally down that way. But, as Steve says, if we hit the 48 figure, there would be a vote of confidence in the leader. Now, at that point, Theresa May would need to get half of those votes. So there's 318 Tory MPs. She would need to get 159 MPs to support her in that vote. And if she didn't get those votes, she wouldn't be able to stand. She'd have to stand down as leader, which I believe is what happened to Ian Duncan Smith.
Yes, yeah. I believe that is the case.
Mm. Thank heavens he's now no longer involved in important decisions for the nation. Never mind. Now, in the same Tim Shipman story that reckons they've got 40 letters of no confidence in the 1922 committee, the ERG source was saying they reckon they have about 130 MPs who are willing to vote against Theresa May, which is a very, very big figure, but then also a figure that's not quite big enough.
Mm-hmm. It's very much a case of almost but not quite. And the wonderful thing about the Tory leadership challenge rules is that you can't just keep on having the same debate over and over and over again. If you put all those letters in and the no confidence vote is held, and you know the leader maintains the confidence of the party by getting over 50% backing them, they can't hold another vote for another year or so. So it basically, in this instance, would lock in Theresa May until after Brexit Day and after we'd left the European Union.
You'd have a Theresa May rollover, as it were.
Yeah.
Mm. And that's the thing, isn't it? At the moment, strong enough, I suppose, the ERG to wound Theresa May really, really badly, but not to kill her. As Machiavelli said, if you must strike, you must strike to kill. Or I believe, as Omar of the Wire put it, if you come at the king, you'd best not miss. As you say, the ERG don't want to go quite yet. I assume it's not going to happen either over the summer. We talked in the last episode about the fact that Theresa May's team, showing the political acumen of squirrels, as is their wont, they were trying to bring forward an early recess, I think essentially to get MPs out of Parliament so they could stop speculating and plotting.
Yeah, essentially the move for the early recess was devised to try and get MPs out of Parliament before Michel Barnier actually gave the EU's official response to the Chequers arrangement and the government's actual official negotiating position.
And he has given that official reaction now, and he didn't literally tear up the Chequers deal in front of Dominic Raab and then do a little jig and laugh and stamp on it and set it on fire, but he might as well have done.
Pretty much.
Thing is, though, the MPs are going to go back to their constituencies and they're going to speak to their members, and I'm guessing if they're anything like the MP we've got here, they're going to be speaking to members of the party, they're going to be out on doorsteps. And I imagine that Tory MPs are going to come back to a lot of very angry Tory members.
Absolutely. I mean, the government and Theresa May and the Conservative Party leadership more generally have been trying to woo local party members to some extent. They held a series of meetings with local Conservative Association chairs where people, technically speaking, got a bit of a chance for a Q&A with the Prime Minister over the Chequers deal and Brexit in general, as well as some just general kind of whining and dining and in effect, diplomacy from the government's end to try and get people on board, which shows you how serious they're taking the situation.
I think it shows you how desperate they are. When Theresa May is on television speaking to people in Newcastle trying to sell the Brexit deal, they're pretty desperate. That's the only thing they've got, they're pretty screwed.
Pretty much, yeah. And this is the thing. I suspect the numbers already exist for the vote of no confidence in Theresa May. The fact that we've only got probably around about 40-odd letters in there, and we've got, 140-odd members, I think, of the ERG? Or something daft?
It seems to
go up and down depending on who you're talking to and all that. But there are definitely more than 50 people who are associated with the ERG, which makes me think they are deliberately keeping their powder dry, partially because they know they can't win that vote yet. But I think they're also waiting for the opportune moment to strike, where what will likely be another round of inevitable shifting of red lines from the government over the EU Brexit negotiations. It's going to be something like turning around and going, well, actually, we've got to be in the customs union because of the Northern Irish border, and that's what we promised previously. That will be something which can be seen by the ERG and an awful lot of Brexiters as a betrayal of the vote, at which point they'll have those extra eight letters already lined up and ready to go. You know, within a week or so, we may very well have a new Prime Minister.
Well, indeed. But I suppose we didn't talk about the Chequers deal much last week, mainly because it's dead on arrival now. But there was the possibility, the reason why people like Michael Gove spoke in favour of it at the time are essentially the Gove position is we leave the EU in 2019. The important thing is to leave. Once we've left, we can try and shape the arrangement afterwards. Mm-hmm. But we don't want to end up in a situation where we never leave the EU at all. On the flip side of that, though, with the Chequers arrangement, and when it first came out, Ian Dunt, who's one of the more informed commentators on all things Brexit, was writing on politics.co.uk that it could be a cruise control to a soft Brexit, that you could take the Chequers deal and you could essentially make it an EEA agreement.
Over time.
Yeah, and that I think is what the ERG was so afraid of, and that's why they essentially put forward the wrecking amendments, which then the government...
But again, this is why the ERG are being potentially not thinking very, very strongly long term. Like, Michael Gove is correct in his analysis that the important thing is we leave, and then we can work out where we go to a degree. The fact that we might have a bit of a stopgap measure in between it's not the end of the world. It's not a problem. Like, once we've left, we're not going to rejoin. You might get a situation where a decade or two down the line, there's enough movement to have a referendum on rejoining the EU. Maybe. But during that time, you've got a lot of ability to renegotiate a new relationship. Yes, it becomes the be-all and end-all of what most governments will be doing, but then that's what we voted for when we voted for Brexit.
Is it, though? Is that what we voted for? I didn't see that on the bus. Protracted negotiations about trade agreements.
I mean, I will just point out that these points were made quite numerous times by a number of Remain commentators and Remain campaigners, and indeed on the debates.
I think
weren't listened to.
I was too busy crying to listen, to be fair. Shocked though I am that an organisation chaired by Jacob Rees-Mogg is not known for its lack of strategic thought, I think the interesting member of the ERG who's on the back benches is not David Davis, it's not even Boris Johnson. I think the really significant figure is Steve Baker. If you read All Out War, the Tim Shipman book, on the whole Brexit vote nonsense, it's Steve Baker who I think is the person behind the ERG who starts the whipping operation in terms of changing the terms of the referendum question to be not an in-out vote but a leave-remain vote. Make sure there's a period of perda in there, whereas previously the plan was for there not to be a perda period, so the government could still be making announcements in the run-up to the referendum. Mm-hmm. And certainly what the polling suggests is that the changing of the wording of the question was a 4% swing either way. So that parliamentary, essentially they called it guerrilla tactics from Steve Baker, probably one of the main things that swings the referendum. Mm-hmm. He's a very, very skilled organiser. If you've ever seen him on the Daily Politics getting eviscerated from Andrew Neil, he comes across as completely ridiculous. In a lot of ways, I'm sure his views are. But in terms of an organiser, he's very formidable. He's got a good operation there. And the fact that he's now on the back benches coordinating this kind of stuff, I think is very, very significant, and I think should make Theresa May quite worried.
Quite possibly, yeah.
Let's imagine vote of confidence goes in Theresa May. Theresa May wins, she's there for a year. If she loses, then new candidates have to come up. It's not like the Labour situation. So Jeremy Corbyn lost the vote of confidence and there was the NEC thing. He was allowed on the ballot paper. That would not be the case, I believe I'm right in saying, in the Tory leadership one. Theresa May would not be able to stand in the ensuing leadership contest. If only one person stands, like in 2003, when Michael Howard was the only candidate, they become the leader. If it's more than two, then MPs essentially vote and they whittle down the list to two candidates, and it's the members who decide from those two who is going to be the leader. This time, there's going to be more than one person and more than two. There's going to be about 47,000 Tory MPs applying to be leader, aren't they? It's going to be very exciting.
Yeah, I mean, you're almost certain to see a decent number of individuals putting their names forward. There wasn't a shortage by any stretch of the imagination last time, actually. The interesting thing is going to be just seeing who exactly it is. There are some almost guaranteed names coming forward. Boris Johnson, obviously, being one of them, because Boris is Boris and is a self-serving gentleman. Let's be polite.
Gove?
Gove is a possibility. I'm not certain he would necessarily. I think it would largely depend on who else puts their name forward. I could easily see a situation where Saeed Javid puts himself forward and allies himself with Gove, basically with Gove becoming, if he were to win, the Chancellor of the Exchequer or something like that, which I think is a role that Gove would quite like.
I think Gove should back Boris again and then stab in the back again.
I don't think
for the drama.
I don't think Boris would be willing to accept his assistance this time.
Javid, I can see, I think is definitely angling for it.
Yeah. Other individuals that might put themselves forward, Jeremy Hunt has been making a point of, despite being a Remainer originally, converting to the cause of Brexit and being quite vocal about it at points. Of course, there's the assassin-faced baby, Gavin Williamson.
The world's worst leadership campaign.
Who will almost certainly put himself forward and hopefully will just get slaughtered. Maybe Andrea Leadsom again, potentially. And then some...
Liam Fox. He'll stand again. He has no concept.
He has no shame. But then there might also be some dark horses, which And the dark horses actually are the ones that it's worth paying attention to, and when it comes to discussions such as these, because the Tories actually have a habit of going for the dark horse candidate when it comes through to the selection of leader once it gets through to the actual membership. So when you look back, Thatcher was a dark horse candidate at the time. Cameron is a dark horse candidate at the time. You can make a case.
Major.
Yeah, Major, similarly.
But certainly against Heseltine and Douglas Hurd, I don't think. Yeah.
Yeah.
Although I think, am I right at saying, I don't think Thatcher and Major would have been picked by members. I'm pretty sure that would have been MPs.
Initially, probably, but I don't know.
But I take your point, often it's the dark horse candidate.
But even once you've moved into the new system itself, Cameron himself was the dark horse candidate against David Davis at the time. This young upstart who seemingly came out of nowhere.
Mm.
So looking at those interesting names that are kind of like gossipy, your likes of James Cleverly, who's currently the vice chair for the Conservatives, or one of the many vice chairs, I believe. Potentially someone like Penny Mordaunt, Esther McVeigh, both of which are very Brexity. Mordaunt has the advantage of not having disgraced herself in the eyes of a significant part of the public by lying to the House. So it would probably be a better bet.
I did say last year, I think, my speculative dark horse candidate was Priti Patel. I think she'd run, but I don't think she'd get it.
I think the whole basically running a shadow foreign operation in Israel against the government's wishes and against the government's knowledge probably screws her from actually making any progress.
Probably. Another one of my predictions has gone to.
The other one that actually could be a dark horse, so if you were to go for it, and you've already mentioned him, is Steve Baker. He's the sort of individual who could galvanise and have the ability to organise amongst the Brexiter MPs for the first stage of the leadership selection process, get through to the second stage, at which point his Brexit credentials are impeccable, so he becomes a very strong candidate.
That would be the most ridiculous prime ministerial selection since Jim Hacker.
I mean, would it surprise you? Yes. Really?
Yeah, genuinely.
In this world, like, I'm not saying he.
That's a deep philosophical question.
I mean, I'm not saying it's going to happen, but it's the sort of thing where someone like Steve Baker, who does care an awful lot about this stuff, who cares an awful lot about Brexit, could easily see himself in a position where a number of the ERG lot go approach him and say, look, you're our best shot.
Why would they pick him and not Rees-Mogg?
Because Rees-Mogg actually has said time and time again he's not interested, and Rees-Mogg actually just would not be able to unite potentially the wider party just because he is such a caricature of himself.
But
Baker is taken seriously. Rees-Mogg is not.
But Michael Gove also ruled out going. Like, politicians always rule out going for leadership and then they stand. Your scenario might work if Rees-Mogg endorses Baker, potentially. I don't think Rees-Mogg would be able to get down to the final two among Tory MPs. Maybe Steve Baker can, but I would... No, I...
When it comes to Jacob Rees-Mogg in the leadership elections, we've passed peak Mogg. People have actually done studies now measuring the number of times he's been mentioned in news articles. And we're now on the... He's now massively on the decline in terms of his relevancy. If you're going to have a choice between Baker and Mogg, Baker's probably a better candidate for them. Now, that's not to say Baker's going to go for it. I don't think he will, necessarily. But I do think if Mogg does rule himself out, then he's the next logical person for the ERG to approach. Unless they all decide to just back Boris, which is possible.
Why would you back Boris, though?
He's got no principles, and he will just bend over on the issue that you want him to bend over on because he wants to be leader.
Or he would do it to be leader, but then become prime minister and probably do something else.
Well,
or,
in which case, you can remove him. And he likes that position far too much to risk it.
Johnson doesn't get to the final two either.
I don't think he does either. But And this is the issue. This is why my money on anybody that's most likely to put themselves forward is probably on Yavid. He's got a very good backstory for the Tories.
Mm-hmm.
He's got the advantage. It's very difficult to turn around and accuse him of racism, which is one of the favourite games of parts of the left to play.
Andrew Adonis can.
Sensible people don't. He has been making some waves and actually doing things which are a little bit more liberal, such as...
supporting the death penalty for the ISIS people. Oh, no, sorry.
I was going to go with, effectively legalising medicinal cannabis as a treatment. We're no longer hearing about the Windrush stuff because he's ended a lot of it already. I'm sure there's still stuff going on in the background somewhere and still some ramifications of all that are yet to play out. But again, it's not his scandal. He's actually cleaning up the mess. So it's again, his backstory and all of these different things mean he can potentially be a new, fresh-faced individual which can reach out to people. He's not got as much baggage as everybody else.
There has been some hard polling done, hasn't there, on the different Tory leaders and how they poll against Jeremy Corbyn?
Yeah, so YouGov did some basic level polling, asking people how people would vote if certain members of the Tory party were in charge. So the results are as follows. So give yourselves a mental drum roll. Boris Johnson, Labour 38, Conservative 38. Jacob Rees-Mogg, Labour 40, Conservative 35.
Labour majority of about 6.
Probably. Michael Gove, Labour 40, Conservative 30.
Labour majority of about 204.
Sayid Javid, Labour 40, Conservative 29.
Labour majority 193.
Jeremy Hunt, Labour 41, Conservative 29.
Conservatives down to 8 seats.
Yes, effectively.
We should probably point out that kind of polling is notoriously a little bit unreliable.
Yeah, I mean, the main issue from my perspective with this is actually there's name recognition is probably playing a big part of this. So, for instance, like the notion that the Tories would get 29% in the current climate is as divided as it is. We're going up against Jeremy Corbyn, where you're either for him or against him, is basically what a lot of the polling is saying. People who are voting Conservative currently do not like him. People who are voting Labour are at least willing to tolerate him.
Really?
Yeah. Well, let's be honest, we're tolerating him. So for Yavid, I feel like that's probably underplaying his potential strength there, because I don't think he is as well known as the others, and I think a lot of people will go, "Who's that?" And again, I think you'd probably want to look at the actual breakdown of the results to see how many don't knows factored into all of that, because obviously they strip those out for these numbers.
I think what's interesting with the figure for Boris, where he's the only one where it's level pegging, is that I think there was also polling suggesting that people wanted him to lead the Brexit negotiations rather than Theresa May. And I think that despite the fact that I think for politicos, certainly, his tenure as Foreign Secretary was disastrous, I don't know if a lot of that has really registered with a lot of the public at large.
No, I don't think it has. They were very, if anything, flash-in-the-pan stories. I think the only one really which had any legs was the handling of the lady who had been arrested in Iran.
Yeah. Sir Kari Ratcliffe.
Yeah.
Hmm. And I think it's... maybe Gove and Hunt almost have the opposite problem. Maybe it's just that they are well-known and quite disliked by the public at large.
Yeah, quite possibly.
Let's finish off with a little bit more idle speculation. So, Not Enough Champagne End of Year Quiz 2017.
Yeah.
We said, I think pretty sure we both said, Theresa May will be Prime Minister by the end of 2018. Do you stand by that?
I think so. I'm not convinced that the ERG are going to be able to find enough people to vote through the vote of no confidence. I think they'll definitely have the number of letters required to force it. But I think ultimately the threat of what could have probably be the almost inevitable snap election off the back of that, or the early election, even if it was held off until after Brexit Day had occurred, you know, would put the fear of God into a lot of marginal seats, including some very Brexity, but now in very marginal seats, such as Ian Duncan Smith.
And Boris Johnson's and Boris Johnson. Is only 5,000. Yeah. And with the Heathrow stuff.
Yeah, God knows.
A capable Labour campaign, and Owen Jones has been sending unseat events, but regardless of that, a capable Labour campaign would make a lot of hay with that, I feel.
Yeah, absolutely. Boris's seat is not guaranteed. And so that those kind of threats and to people's basically jobs, well, are you really going to vote for yourself to be made redundant? I don't think you are. And I think that's that ultimately, as long as the polls stay either with Labour level pegging or Labour slightly ahead, which is where we are now, I don't think the Tories are gonna break for a potential possible early election.
What do you think the chances that essentially that March deadline is passed and then May's ditched then?
I think May stand down after that March deadline, just out of sheer frustration and kind of going, I've done it, I've done the bit, my bit, you gits can deal with the rest of it now.
I'd love it if that was her final speech in number 10.
I'm not necessarily sure she will do that, because I genuinely do think that she does want to be remembered for more than just Brexit. She is someone with a number of passions and as much as we may disagree with them in a number of policy areas such as grammar schools and the like, where she does think they are the right thing to do, and just she does want to make a difference in certain areas, and she wants a legacy that's meaningful and not just I managed to bail out the ship as it was sinking, which is understandable. Anybody would want that. And so I could see her trying to stick around, but equally I think it's possible that she might just decide, screw this, I've done my bit, I've kept the ship afloat as long as I can, let somebody else take over.
There could be a lot of grim hanging on till 2021, 2010, 2022, but then I wouldn't be surprised if there's an almighty civil war. It's impossible to tell. Exciting times. Hope you've enjoyed that episode. If you want more podcasts, you can find them on iTunes or on our website, notenoughchampagne.com, or on our Facebook page, facebook.com/notenoughchampagne. Our Twitter handle is @nochampagnepod. James Crown designed our logo, and Dave Deppett is responsible for our theme tune, Plucky Good Times. My Twitter handle is @PepperBatRioter.
Mine is @AcousticRadical.
Happy plotting, everyone.